and welcome to Visions. I am Eulalie Wickham-Ashby, and today I am going to be exploring the whole topic of disaster preparedness. How do we really prepare as individuals with disabilities, as families who have members with disabilities? And today to discuss this with me is Selwyn Brooks. Welcome to the program, Selwyn.
I'm glad to be here.
So Selwyn, let's start by looking at how did you get involved in disaster preparedness?
Well, my involvement in disaster preparedness stretched in the early days when I was involved with the Red Ribbon. And you really know that is quite a long time ago. But actively involved in the newer phase of it since in 2003. Mm-hmm. With the establishment of the St. James Central constituency, and then that created the need to develop a DO in St. James Central.
Okay, so what is a DEO?
The DO is a community-based organization, and we are the voluntary arm of the Department of Emergency Management, and our primary function and role would be to garnish the support of persons who reside in our respective communities and see how we can engage them and mobilize them to offer the community in which we live some of the best practices pertaining to how we relate to disasters and in emergencies.
All right, so let's then look at what really is disaster preparedness. How can we as a society really prepare? Because I have heard a view by many saying that you really cannot prepare for a hurricane, you really cannot prepare for an earthquake or even a tsunami. But I'm sure your view will differ.
Most definitely, because the level of preparedness starts with persons accepting what can happen if these hazards impact you. And I think that the complacency that we currently seem to feel comfortable with is something that has to be of some concern to all of us, not only the government, all of us. Preparedness for a particular hazard, you first need to understand what can happen as a consequence of that hazard. And you need to evaluate what is your status, what is your environment, and based on things like that, you can then determine what you would need in your preparedness guidelines to help you to cope first, to respond, and hope that that will significantly reduce the impact and that will blend to the recovery process, having less to respond to.
I know recently a colleague of mine shared with me how one of the schools she's involved with, the Luther Thorne School, primary school, really have worked consistently at getting both pupils and staff to do constant drills so that they're able to move in a hurry should any natural disaster occur, or even if some perceived threat is there at the school, they're able to mobilize the children and staff to deal with the situation.
And that is very good. Especially if you start to sensitize the younger ones, and this is at primary school, and whether they go on to secondary school, they should be able to have a better understanding as what is likely to happen, and therefore create that safety culture that is very much needed to how we address and how we respond, plan, and how we recover from the various issues and hazards that will impact us from time to time. And it doesn't necessarily have to focus so much on the hurricane, because the hurricane is the easiest hazard that we can prepare for, because you know it is coming. You know the speed. You know a lot of information based on the forecast that comes before. So you can plan based on what is expected. But if you have an earthquake or tsunami or any other fire, things of this sort, you do not have the luxury of a warning period that can aid you to prepare for it. So therefore, it means that before then, you must recognize the implications of what would happen if you are not prepared, and how would you respond, and how will you recover from these incidents.
Okay, so that is quite true and very necessary. So Here's a call to all the primary, secondary schools, university, colleges, polytechnics, to focus a bit more on doing consistent drills and sharing of information that your students and staff, as well as the public who may be utilizing your services at the time, understand what needs to take place when the drill occurs.
And to add to that, I relate to see the day come that disaster management in some form, fashion is incorporated into the syllabus of all the schools. And if it, it can be, there's an introduction to it at the primary school level. Maybe move on to secondary, you can go into another phase of it. Because disaster management is, and the way how we respond is going to be with us for the duration of our lives. It is not only how you respond to it, but the variety of areas that person can also seek employment is quite varied. So it has scope not only to educate a population that will advise them and lead them how to prepare, but it also has that opportunity that you can see it as a vocation and as a job, and it will aid you significantly in your personal and also how you share this information to the wider community.
Okay, Selwyn, now we know quite recently Dominica would have been the most recent country to have experienced severe harshness from Hurricane Maria. Share with us, because I know that you traveled to that country, share with us what that was like for you and what lessons you took from it that could be implemented here in Barbados.
On arrival in Dominica that early morning, what we saw, it is something I've never seen before in terms of the landscape was totally robbed of all vegetation. And there was total destruction. There was even a body floating in the water that had washed down from one of the rivers. And then as we went ashore, the level of destruction showed that nothing was spared. And people were just aimlessly walking around, trying to cope with what had happened, recognizing the devastation of the impact and the need for assistance, and especially water and other services. Should a similar occurrence happen to Barbados, I do not think that we will cope. And the reason why I'm saying this is that we have in Barbados adopted a certain lifestyle and a certain level of complacency that we do not take our disaster management practices and preparations as severe and as pertinent as we ought to. So that opportunity to be there for those 12 days, it really brought home to me and those other persons who were with us the need to look at what we do here in Barbados and the need to sensitize persons in our various communities, because a resilient community or a resilient country starts with a level of resilience at the community level. And at the community level, that starts in the home. So if we can inculcate that type of safety, environment, and culture in our homes, and that is extended to the communities, I think that is where the country and the whole will build a level of resilience to the impact of those hazards that will come from time to time. And I hope that we will never have to experience what Dominica has experienced, but it is going to happen one day. That has to be the understanding that people should accept, that it is going to happen someday, and let us prepare to reduce the level, because you can't stop it from happening. But let us see how we can prepare to reduce the level of impact so that we will be able to recover within the shortest possible time and continue to build on the quality of life that we currently now enjoy.
Okay, so let's look at practical steps that we can take to build up our own resilience psychologically as well as physically.
Physically, I would interpret that to mean what is your level of your personal preparations in your home.
Yes.
There's no excuse that Barbados cannot say that they do not get this information, especially around this time. The Department of Emergency Management and various agencies, insurance companies, there's a lot of information, leaflets, brochures and pamphlets that share this information. So if we heed to the information that is shared, So that on a daily basis, on a monthly basis, on a weekly basis, whenever we can afford, that we can add certain things to our emergency supply kit. So over a gradual period of time, we will build some level of resilience in terms of the supplies. We need to look at, I will put the question out to those who are listening to me now. Have you done an evaluation of your home and how the termite has infested your roof? Have you done an audit on your electrical appliances and your supply? Have you looked around your home to see those trees that are towering over your house that in the event we have high winds will come crashing down on your home? If you have persons who are at home that are on medication, have you sought to purchase or to acquire an additional quantum of medication? Because if you are impacted and the suppliers, whether the pharmacies or whatnot, they too are impacted, you do not have. Do you have the necessary safeguards that your documents and your wills and all of your legal are in a safe place? I mean, the list goes on. And I won't take the time to list all of them now, but these are some of the things that we are failing to accept that we need to do within our respective homes. And if you take it to the community, many persons live in a community and they know the flood-prone areas and they know where the water will come from, and yet they do not do anything about it. We also have persons with bad practices that when the plastic bags and the grass that they cut settle in front of the well, which means that the well does not have the capacity to do what it's designed for. And persons adopt an attitude, is government supposed to do this? Is drainage supposed to do it? There's always some person else is supposed to do what, in actual fact, if we as individuals do some ourselves, we will significantly reduce what state has to do and we will build the level of resilience that is needed. And lastly, but not least, it turns the educational component of it. And it will remiss me if I leave the studio and say, get involved in your district emergency organization in the community in which you live. Because the district emergency organization should be able to garnish the resources and resourceful persons who live in the respective communities that they can add value and add capacity to that unit so that in the event if they have to respond, there is some level of capacity. So in a nutshell, Eulene, there is a lot more that we need to do. But it has to start with the individual recognizing that they too have to do something to help themselves and by extension their communities. And last but not least, that assistance stretches across to the country's capacity to respond.
Okay, so let's go back to Dominica. You spoke to what you saw, how the landscape looked. And let's hear now, you did mention that you noticed some people strolling around aimlessly, which showed the level of psychological impact the hurricane had on the individuals. And what would you say can be done to help individuals cope mentally, emotionally, with the loss and the trauma they would have experienced?
That is not an easy task, Eulene, because when a person can look back and see what has happened, I've seen two-story properties that has been just demolished into a rubble on the ground. And when persons see that their long life's possessions have just been destroyed and they have a number of young children, and even if they have elderly people, how do you build back? How do you cope? How do you, the reality first has to set in as what has happened and what you have lost. And then, how am I going to replace all of that which I have just lost? So it is not an easy, and for some persons who have not experienced it, you might not be able to really appreciate what the person goes through. But you don't have to get to that stage to experience it to know what is possible. So the psychological assessment very much starts with persons accepting what has happened. And if necessary, seek the necessary assistance first in getting them to understand what is happening and what are the processes now going forward that will get them back to some level of comfort in the initial stages and then the rebuilding process at a later stage.
Well, I'm really pleased to have learned in recent days that PAHO, the Pan-American Health Organization in the Caribbean, will be working with CARICOM and other ministries of health to develop a psychological assessment package to work with not only the victims of the country, but also the first responders.
Yes.
Because I think that is essential. Oftentimes, we don't think of the social workers, the psychologists, the defense forces personnel, the nurses, and so on, because they too will be seeing the impact to the human beings as well as to the country. And therefore, that also makes a significant impact on their own psyche.
When we were in Dominica and we were assisting the defense force in the distribution of supplies, that had several of us very, very consumed, because we in Barbados had never experienced this. But to see the agony and the frustration and the pain and the people crying, and to see that even we are making a contribution by giving out the various rations and packs, we know that that is not going to last more than maybe a serving or two. And when you realize that there's this kind of appreciation of what we are doing, but you yourself would like to think you could have done more. And sometimes seeing the level of destruction can put you in awe. I said, wow, how am I going to cope with this? So the psychological assessment and evaluation for the first responders and the persons who respond in the initial stages is very important. And that sometimes helps to pave the way for those persons who, if they have to respond again, how they would approach the individuals maybe in a different way, because you can live on those experiences and improve on them. Because if you have that commitment to serve, you really want to do the best that you can do.
You are listening to Visions with me, Yulalee Wickham-Ashby, and today my guest is Selwyn Brooks, one of the stalwarts in the area of disaster preparedness with the St. James Central District Emergency Organization. Now, Selwyn, we would have looked at what transpired in Dominica with Hurricane Maria and how we have assisted. And now let's take a more local look at how your DEO, your District Emergency Organization, functions in working within the various communities on the island.
Our DEO has set over the last 17 years a number of procedures on how we will deploy in the event if we are asked to respond to some level of impact or incident. Within the hurricane season, members would have already indicated their level of preparedness at a personal level, because persons can only go to respond to help others if they themselves are available and if they have taken heed to their own personal preparations. For hurricanes, once the advisory is given, the DO is put on a state of readiness, and the necessary persons and the vulnerable persons and one to other things are initiatives are enacted so as to build up leading to the likely impact, so that you would have done some of your preparations. I think that the District Emergency Organization in general has the potential to offer the country the first level of response by being community-minded persons and knowing what is within your respective communities, so you're more likely to respond to it in a precise way, providing you have been trained in the various areas to do that level of response. So I think that we are just playing our part in support of the department, and we sincerely hope that should the occasion arise, that we will be able to effectively do what we have been training for the last couple of years to do.
All right, so in terms of the District Emergency Management Department, tell us a little about that agency and your relationship and how you work together to really combat some of the damage or expected damage as it relates to hurricanes or earthquakes, even though we haven't touched on earthquakes as yet.
Yes. That arrangement with the, as I said, we are the voluntary arm of the department for the St. James area. By working with the department from the beginning of an alert or advisory to the recovery after impact, goes through a number of phases in our preparedness and your mitigation. And our mitigation will form part of what we're doing all in now, sensitizing and trying to brief people to get them up to certain levels of awareness, and so that they can take their own personal arrangements a little more seriously. In the event if something you have to respond, it means we deploy persons who are aptly trained at a certain level, because we're here to assist in the senior response agencies, not necessarily to take over from them. We're there to assist them. And after the impact, there's a damage assessment process where persons are deployed to the various areas to quantify and try to ascertain the level of damage and what may be necessary. And we submit those reports to the department, which then goes on to the regulatory agencies within government for their evaluation and possibly assistance to those persons who are affected. And that is basically how the system works.
Okay. So, Selvin, for many individuals, yes, we hear the information repeatedly, particularly during the hurricane season. And sometimes, because we hear it so often, we think we know it, but then recognize we really don't have the information stored in our heads. So can you tell us, like, what are the different stages, you know, the hurricane warning, the flood watch? Can you share with us those steps?
You will get an advisory once the Met Office, the other agencies who are monitoring the system, they would advise us in an advisory that there is some possibility of a system coming our way. Following that, you'll get the warning is the last phase, where you will know that within 36 hours that you are likely to have some level of impact. And based on the magnitude of the system in their evaluation, they will let you know. And it is our job to help share that information so that people will be aware as to what is need to be done. So it is very much a systematic way of alerting and warning and preparing people. And that is the only hazard that you have, that luxury. That's a hurricane. We don't have that luxury in a fire or earthquake or tsunami. But tsunami, depending on the nature of it and how close it is, you have some lead way of warning, but depending on the speed that the water is traveling at, that warning period can not necessarily be, it can be inefficient because of the speed and the size and the volume of what is expected in a tsunami activity.
Okay, so now that we're on tsunamis, when we hear that warning, what should we do?
First of all, every person in Barbados should recognize that we can be impacted by tsunami regardless of where you live. If you are closer to the coastline, you are more prone for water damage, or the likelihood of the impact as a consequence of the water and the debris that will be associated with that activity. But don't assume that because you may live on the ridge of a certain height that you're not going to be impacted, because you will be impacted by those persons who are seeking relief from the coast, who are going to higher elevations. So it is time that we understand that tsunami is, it is a hazard that we have to plan and prepare for it, and every person has to play a part. Because what are you going to do with those persons who have lost their possessions as a result of the tsunami activity? They are going to be seeking shelter, and we have to offer them some level of comfort, and especially in initial stages. So we all are going to be impacted, and we all can play a part. So don't assume that because you don't live on the coast, that you cannot play a part or that you will not be impacted.
Well, I've heard so many people say, well, Barbados is such a small island. It's very flat. We don't have any mountains, any huge hills that we can go to that height to avoid the tsunami. What do you say to that?
Well, depending on the magnitude and the size of the waves will help determine where we would estimate, and use the word estimate, to be the safe height that you can resort to. So I believe that the regulatory agencies and the coastal zone and the other factors and the Assembly Department, based on the inter-agency cooperation system, will share that information so that residents will know, providing that you have the time to do what is necessary. Because if the epicenter or what has caused that level of impact is closer to Barbados, then you would expect that the lead time is going to be significantly less than if you had a transatlantic type of tsunami activity where you have more time given that the water has to traverse before it gets to shore.
Okay.
But don't believe that. I've heard some people say that Barbados is below sea level. That is a myth. Barbados is not below sea level. And don't assume that impression or that opinion that people have.
Is the right one. It's not the right one.
No.
Okay. So in our remaining time, let us take a focus on the earthquakes. Because as you correctly said, with earthquakes and the tsunami, you have a far less time span to really prepare and deal with it. So let's talk about the earthquake, because we would have experienced an earth tremor back in 2007. And then more recently, we would have had some very small earth tremors as well. And people were a bit shaken and a bit dazed as to what to do.
Your earthquake preparation starts with you having an understanding of the property that you reside in, or the location where you work. What is the integrity of that structure and the composition of the materials that it is constructed with, and how is it likely to respond to earthquake activity? And I think that is where you first have to start in your preparations for earthquake, because you will not get any warning. When the incident is actually occurring, because you don't have any prior warning, you should seek safe accommodation in an area of the building that you perceive that will be able to withstand. And of course, that is judgmental based on what is above you and what kind of surface you are in, and if it is cracked, and what if it is falling or whatever. So that is a continuous evaluation that you would have to consider. There's the drop and hole that a lot of persons would have heard about. You can use that, but don't go under a table that's made out of plywood and you have a 2-ton beam above your head. So it is a matter of persons recognizing the integrity of the building and where it's best located within that building that you can resort to for that type of earthquake activity. When the incident has passed, they sometimes, depending on the severity of the earthquake, there will be aftershocks. So it is not necessarily safe that once the activity has ceased or appear to have ceased, that it's safe to go outside. But nevertheless, that is another judgment call, that you can go outside based on the level of impact that you have experienced, and then you start to see how you can cope with the recovery process, bearing in mind that there are a number of other hazards that will be consequential to the actual earthquake activity.
Well, Selwyn, our time has caught up with us, and it usually does when you're having one of these type of informative, exciting, informational programs. So I just want to give you the last word.
Well, Eudelina, it was nice being here. I would like to encourage Barbadians to keep in touch with the Department of Emergency Management. Get to know your district emergency organization chairperson and seek to offer some level of assistance to them. And in so doing, we can help build the level of community resilience that we need, because we will be impacted one day, sooner or later. And let us inculcate an attitude that disaster management is everyone's business.
Well said, Selwyn, and I want to thank you for sharing. And you know, remember that this information is pertinent to persons with disabilities as well as those without. So we need to take the information and use it wisely and effective for our own safety and our own lives, keeping ourselves alive. So until next week when I hear you, remember, this has been Visions with me, Eudelie Wickham, and my special guest, Selwyn Brooks. My technical operator today was David Daddy Biggs Howell. You can reach me on 1-246-430-7300 or 1-246-269-9660. And yes, you can WhatsApp me on that same mobile number. You can email me on Visions Barbados, that's V-I-S-I-O-N-S Barbados, B-A-R-B-A-D-O-S, @gmail.com. And of course, you can check this and past episodes of Vision on the VOB929.com website. Look for the podcast link, click on it, look for Visions Radio Program, and voila. So until next week, be safe and enjoy yourself.